we all know what it is like to feel afraid. We have all carried little worries. Some of us have even faced larger fears. When you feel that anxiety start to bubble up, how do you find courage? This is one place where you can nurture that strength. There is a power here in our Unitarian Universalist faith, in this community of fellow seekers. We are imperfect, vulnerable, real human beings who come together week after week to do when the Spirit says do, even when we are afraid. With tears and laughter and shouting and singing, we do our best to ground ourselves in compassion and live into courage. Song by song, step by step, hand in hand. Come, join us. All are welcome.
If there are any other children who'd like to come forward onto the quilt, I've got a story for you. For everybody. Now, when we think of heroes, lots of times we think of people who are young and strong. Maybe they even have capes. But in this story, it's an old story from England, the hero has knitting. Knitting, like this dress is knitted. Yeah. And she's not exactly young. In fact, people call her Granny. And it all happened with a mistake. She got up at midnight thinking that it was 4 a.m. It was time to get ready to go to Crocombe Market, where she went once a week. But she didn't know it was midnight, so she had a sip to drink and a bite to eat, and she gave the same to her horse, Smart. He'd been her companion for about 40 years. Said, it's a long time. I told you she wasn't young. She loaded up her pannier with the eggs and jams and breads that she was going to sell at market, and then she put her knitting on the top. She might decide to do a little along the way. She saddled up Smart, hung the pannier on the side, and off they went into the dark of night, into the forest. Smart knew the way, and his pace was very steady. He plodded along, and pretty soon Granny fell asleep. She didn't know how long she'd been sleeping when suddenly Smart stopped. Smart stopped, and she could feel his body shivering with fright, and his mane was stiff and his tail was stiff. And then she heard it, the gallop of hooves coming closer from no ordinary horse. And then, a hare, a rabbit, jumped right into her lap. It was trembling too. So without really thinking about it, she lifted up her knitting, put the hare in her basket, and carefully replaced the wool on top. And then she stood there, or sat there, with her palms sweating and her heart beating. The hooves were coming closer and closer. It's an old folktale. I told a true story 2 weeks ago, so you have to know the difference. This one is a folktale, and this dark rider was coming closer and closer, and then all of a sudden it was there, right beside her. The shadows were so deep, she couldn't even make out who it was, but she didn't really want to try either. She kept her head down, and just when she didn't know what to do, she noticed how Smart was just chewing on the grass as though it were sweet, and she knew it wasn't. So she took up her knitting and began clickety-click, clickety-click. It helped her relax a little. And then when the rider shouted out in his gruff voice, "Have you seen a hare go past?" Well, Granny knew not to answer, but she shook her head. She shook her head. And if you think she was lying, she wasn't. The hare had gone past. Was there in her basket. But of course, the rider didn't know that. He dug his spurs into the horse and off they galloped. And off. Smart gallop, too. He hadn't cantered in 20 years. And there he was, racing as fast as he could towards Roebuck Stream. And then he galloped right down the center of that stream where no one could catch their scent. They galloped for a long ways. And then finally, when they were certain that the rider was long gone, Smart stopped. It was then that Granny noticed a trembling in the basket. She lifted up the wool now, and instead of a hare, there was a young woman coming out of the basket. Her face all lit up like sunshine, and she kissed Granny on both her cheeks. And she said, "Thank you." Granny shrugged her shoulders. She said, Oh, you rescued me. I was bewitched. I was transformed into a hare and plagued to be forever hunted unless somebody could help me get behind my pursuer. You did that." She kissed Granny again and walked off to make a new life. Well, Smart and Granny walked off too. They carried on plodding along all the way into Crocombe Town. And when they got to the village square, Granny saw the clock tower said 3 a.m. How did I make a mistake like that, she wondered. But then she thought about the young woman set free, and she shrugged her shoulders again. Her heart had finally calmed down. She was tired. It takes a lot of, energy and strength and, courage to follow your horse and your heart when you don't know what's going to happen. And that's what she did. And if you don't have a horse, you have to follow just your heart. She lay down on the bench and fell fast asleep. And Smart slept, standing beside her. And that's my story of courage.
Thank you again. Your courage to go up there and sing gives us a great gift. Thank you. So I've spent the last 2 days at a workshop on spiritual care for people in palliative and hospice settings. It's part of a 2-year program called The Sacred Art of Living and Dying. As you can well imagine, we probe many deep and tender places. Some of the many insights I have gained are around courage. I used to think of it more in terms of action, the burning building, drowning person in the frozen lake kind of scenario. While this physical and emotional bravery is and should be honored as an extreme act of cherishing the other, it is rare in most of our lives, and yet we have all been courageous. So how do you reconcile the courage of walking into the doctor's office for that news and that of running into the road to snatch the toddler to safety? If we think of courage as something added on, that courage itself is a quality that people have to a greater or lesser degree, then reconciliation is easier. But what if we turn it around? What if we see courage rather as an agent or a tool, like a chisel in the hands of the sculptor working to uncover that inner beauty in that unique piece of marble? What if we see courage as something that moves within us to push away fear or anxiety or uneasy silence, to help us uncover our deepest and best self, which is already there, waiting? In this way, courage is like a wind that blows on our inner spark of life and makes it shine more brightly. It helps us move aside the doubts and fears which obscure the very light of our hearts and souls. There's a deep resonance in us when we witness courage, an instant recognition of that music that flows through all our hearts. We all see sparks from the work of courage, great and small, every day. The tired mom being patient again, the person waking up to a deep grief and getting up anyways, the shaky voice that speaks up. I look around this room and know I have been privileged to witness many stories of courage moving through you, either told to me in the safe embrace of small groups or witnessed in the everyday. To clearly see courage working through someone is to uncover their shining soul as an amazing gift. Here's one such story from long ago. This is about a young girl with Down syndrome, her favorite tree, and a heart full of love and the spirit of courage. Claire went to a convent in Versailles, France, about 50 years ago. While the nuns were very loving, kids in those days were pretty well left to their own during lunch and recess. 9-year-old Claire was teased and mocked. The girls said mean things to her and called her an ugly dog. Claire was slow to think, but not slow to feel. To get away, she climbed that lone tree in the courtyard of the walled school. Claire sat and sang there most days. Sometimes she played hand games with a littler girl who was also teased for being different. Sometimes they played hopscotch for a while if the other girls were somewhere else. If the bell rang when the two girls were in the tree, Claire would sigh, "J'ai peur. I'm afraid." And then she would put her hand to her chest, take a deep breath, and say, "But I will use my best heart." And then she would get down from that tree, help the younger one to the ground, kiss her on both cheeks, and walk alone to her classroom. Her courage worked through her to uncover a love that was deep and abiding. I know this for sure, because I was the littler girl. May we honor within us and others that deep work of the spirit of courage that helps us walk through fear and yet still use our best hearts. Thank you.
Jean Shindoa Bolin writes, "Our word courage comes from the French word cœur, heart. Courage is a willingness to act from the heart, to let your heart lead the way, not knowing what will be required of you next and if you can do it." During our shared moment of silence, I invite you to ponder these questions. When in your life have you been afraid? When you consider the future, what worries rise to the fore? And what would it look like if, in the face of those fears and worries, you decided to use your best heart? Let us ponder the possibilities held in the peace of quiet community.
Thank you.
courage, the practice of walking alongside fear. In his book, Freedom from Fear, Unitarian Universalist minister Reverend Forrest Church breaks down fear into five different types, each of which is grounded in a different part of the self. As I describe them, I invite you to think about which one is most familiar to you. Which fear do you encounter most in your life? The first type is fright. This is fear centered in the body. It is the one that makes us flee from physical danger. It makes us cross to the other side of the street when there is an angry drunk shouting threats in our path. It makes us swoop up a toddler when they amble with outstretched hands to those sharp scissors or unprotected outlets. Fright in appropriate doses can be useful. Fright in overdrive can be disabling, resulting in paranoia or phobia. In certain people, things like spiders, open spaces, or heights can trigger dizziness, nausea, breathlessness, and panic attacks. The second type of fear is worry, which is grounded in the intellect. Our mind looks ahead and warns us of all the potential pitfalls. Like fright, at the very beginning of its lifespan, worry can be useful. For example, worry about the possibility of rain at your big outdoor event might lead you to choose a location that has an indoor option. Worry can be less useful, however, when it continues after plans have been adjusted or when it extends to things over which we have little or no control. I would bet that most of us have, at some point or another, felt that sick to our stomach worry about something, about our finances, our own health, or the health of someone we love, climate change. Expert worriers like myself can worry about anything. I worry about getting it all done, about not spending enough time with my kids because I'm trying to get it all done. I worry about forgetting something we'll need when I pack for a trip. I worry about catching a bad cold right before I have to preach. I worry that washing our Tupperware in the dishwasher increases the likelihood that it will leach bad chemicals into our children's food. I worry on and off about whether my cell phone will give me cancer and whether the radiation from the dental x-rays is really worth the assurance of catching the cavities early. There's really no lack of things about which to worry. If you are a worrier or you know a worrier, you know what I'm talking about. One of my favorite quotations on this is from Mark Twain. My life has been filled with terrible misfortunes, most of which have never happened. Life does not consist mainly or even largely of facts and happenings. It consists mainly of the storm of thoughts that is forever blowing through one's head. Oh, I know that storm. The third type of fear is guilt, fear that is centered in the conscience. Guilt is the fear that we are not morally good enough. We feel guilty about not doing enough to save the planet, or guilty about all that we have in the face of those who have not. We feel guilty about not being patient enough with our kids, not spending enough time with our friends, not being attentive enough to our parents. Perhaps we are not as consistently kind as we want to be. Moral perfection is impossible. If we are prone to guilt, reasons for it are easy to find. The fourth type of fear is insecurity, which is grounded in the emotions. Insecurity is fear of being exposed as inadequate, not good enough, at our jobs, in social interactions, in our family life, in the world at large. It manifests as fear of judgment, rejection, or criticism, or the underlying fear of not being loved. I would bet that insecurity is a more common fear than we think, Just this month, two of our brave worship lay leaders admitted to this one, and I wondered how much of you have also experienced it, that fear that people won't like you. The desire to be liked and accepted is such a basic desire. It makes sense that some of us would worry about it, at least occasionally. Forest Church says, why do we feel inadequate as often as we do? For one thing, being human is intrinsically awkward. I love that. Being human is intrinsically awkward, hence insecurity. The fifth and final type of fear, according to Church, is dread, which is rooted in the soul. Dread is an overwhelming fear of the future. It's not just a specific worry that such and such a bad thing will happen. It is a fear that bad things will happen, and I don't even know what they are. Dread is fear of the unknown. It is fear of change. Since life is change, dread becomes, in the end, a fear of life. Fright, worry, guilt, insecurity, dread. As you make your way through your own living, which fear affects you the most? Consider how all these fears manifest in the body. Think about how you feel when you carry these feelings. For me, it looks like this. Clenched fists, hunched shoulders, arms crossed, crouching, cowering. I just want to crawl under the covers and into a ball. Of course, we usually can't stay under the covers, sadly. If you force yourself to continue with your daily routines despite the fears, as you do so, you may find you have a perpetual tightness in your throat, knots in your stomach, pains in your head and shoulders. It is a posture of tightness, clinging, and rigidity. Fear makes us feel bad physically. It can disable us in other ways as well. Feelings of insecurity can lead you to cut yourself off from other people. Perhaps you put up your guard, not letting others see your authentic self. Or perhaps you choose non-participation, isolating yourself literally as well as figuratively. In either case, through self-isolation, though it may keep you safe from judgment and rejection, you also miss out on the possibilities of love and authentic connection. Some fears can lead to paralysis. Have you ever felt paralyzed by fear or worry? We can't make a decision because we're afraid of making the wrong choice. We don't want to try a new idea because we're afraid of failure. Steeped in unspecified dread and stuck in paralysis, we refuse to take the risks that might lead to joy, success, connection, deeper engagement in life. As Church says, afraid to die, we fear to live because life is dangerous. Why do we carry these fears beyond their usefulness? Why do we carry them even when they debilitate us? For one thing, the society in which we live does quite a bit of fear-mongering. Commercials for the nightly news are so extreme that they are regularly imitated by comedians. Common household items that can kill you. Find out which ones at 11. The news is filled with the most frightening events occurring in our world. A whole world of ways to suffer pain and loss are collected and funneled into our heads every day. I wonder if this is part of the reason for the recent popularity of that keep calm and carry on phrase. It is so appealing, really. I coveted the mug in the office so much that Karen got me one of my own. It is just the thing to keep that fear-mongering at bay. Back to the question of why we humans are so primed to be fearful. Canadian-born academic Steven Pinker says that we are biologically engineered that way. Early in our evolution, it was to our benefit as a species to be on the alert for danger. Our memories actually retain examples of danger and suffering much more readily than they retain examples of peace and harmony. Pinker notes that this biological proclivity explains our tendency to look at the progression of human history and conclude that our society is getting more and more violent. In fact, Pinker says, if you study it objectively, the prevalence of violence in our society has actually decreased over the course of history. So how might we counter our biological tendency to focus on the scary stuff fed by the media's endless supply of examples of scary stuff? How do we move from this posture to this posture, even when we are afraid? Courage. I love that the word courage is rooted in the word for heart. Courage. Courage is the choice to deliberately do this when we are afraid. Open arms, open heart. Come what may, in the words of Mary Oliver, you let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. You decide to engage in life fully and wholeheartedly, despite the risks. Forest Church names three types of courage. The courage to act. Despite the risks of failure, you do what you can do. The courage to love. Despite the risk of loss, you allow yourself to love what you love. And the courage to be. Despite the risk of criticism and vulnerability, you decide to be who you are. Do what you can do. Love what you love. Be who you are. Last Sunday, I spoke of the Buddhist practice of sitting with fear, anger, and sadness, and how in doing so, you can often uncover a deep caring beneath. You are angry at a given policy because you care about the people it affects. You are sad about a loss because the one you loved is gone. You are afraid of what climate change is doing to our planet because you love our Earth and the web of life it sustains. On the other side of fear, anger, and sadness is care and compassion. Last Sunday, I lifted up the Dalai Lama as an example of a person who is deeply grounded in that compassion. He has known suffering and injustice, and yet he radiates love. The Dalai Lama is a good model for me of heart-centered courage. In an article called Sacred Anxiety, Unitarian Universalist author Robert Garrison says, "To love unconditionally is our greatest challenge. Serenity does not arise from permanent absence of anxiety, but from the habit of constantly transmuting anxiety into love. As it says in Christian scripture, perfect love casts out all fear." Apply it to our different fear types, and you'll find that you can heal guilt with the love of self-forgiveness. You can help move past your self-conscious insecurity when you focus on loving the thing or person before you. And love of life is a great antidote to worry or dread. Consider a person who is afraid of making mistakes in her piano recital. She might find her courage by turning her focus away from whether or not she gets all the right notes and shift instead to her love of playing the music. Feel the fear of failure and choose to do this. Consider a situation in which you feel socially awkward and are worried about what people are thinking about you and whether they like you. Maybe you can find your courage by shifting your focus away from what they might think of you and shift instead to your own interest in them. Open your heart to them and allow yourself to wonder, what are they feeling? What are they trying to say? What matters to them and why? As you continue to interact, note what you appreciate about each person. Grounded in courage, try to listen with compassion and speak with warmth. Feel the social fear and choose to do this. I said that love is a great antidote to both worry and dread. Since worry and dread take place in the future tense, a key here is to love what you love in the present moment. What practices help you love what you love in the present moment? Making art, singing music, petting a beloved animal companion, walking in nature. Recall the Wendell Berry poem in our hymnal. When despair for the world grows in me and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wooddrake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. That one line has become a catchphrase in our house when someone, usually me, is worrying. Are you taxing your life with forethought of grief? Again, remember that Twain quotation about the storm of thoughts that is forever blowing through one's head? I've just realized while writing this sermon that the key for me to courage is to get out of my head and sink into my heart. This is what I did when my mom was diagnosed with cancer and when our baby son had heart surgery. I didn't even really do it on purpose. I gave up on trying to project all the possible outcomes and plan for them. I let go of trying to control things in my head, and I sank down into my heart. There was sadness there, and fear, but also love, lots of love. Love for my mother, love for our son, love from and for family and friends who held us through it. In the love, I found courage. In retrospect, I see that I've done this with lesser worries as well. When I face the big interview that is the final exam in Unitarian Universalist ministry, I was nervous as all get out. I was facing my worst demons, fear of failure, fear of criticism. What if I wasn't good enough? To prepare, I did two things. I managed to let go of the storm forever blowing through my head and trust the process. If they said I wasn't ready yet, fine, I would do what I needed to do to deepen my training. The second thing I did was make myself a mixed tape. Yes, it was a tape back then. I listened to it in the waiting room before the interview. It was full of show tunes I loved. Encouraging songs, I Have Confidence from The Sound of Music, Don't Rain on My Parade from Funny Girl, I Whistle a Happy Tune from The King and I, Buenos Aires from Evita, just listing the titles makes me want to sing them, but I won't. What I realized in retrospect is that these songs that I love helped me get into that heart space I needed to be in. I was able to bring to that interview my full, authentic, heart-centered self. I passed. I've used the same courage to get through church conflict. I learned most of it in the first congregation I served. My fear of conflict was strong as a newbie minister. I worried about a rift developing in the congregation. I worried about the hurt feelings on all sides. I worried that I would be misunderstood or say things that just made it worse. I worried that I wouldn't be able to fix it. In time, however, I learned to take a breath, sink down into my heart, and move through it with love. I learned that when I did so and others did so, I didn't have to fix it. We could work on healing together. And that process just makes all of us stronger. Courage doesn't get rid of fear, but it gives us a grounding, an anchor to walk alongside fear. Think of Claire, who says she feels afraid but is determined each day to use her best heart. Think of yourself when you have faced a crisis, maybe a medical crisis, your own or somebody else's. The fear doesn't go away. But there is a way you can lean into the love around you. You can decide to walk through it with arms open. Our congregation's mission, our purpose, is to transform ourselves and our world through compassionate action. We can do this by practicing courage. Imagine the transformation of self. When we feel fear instead of doing this, what would it be like if we did this? Imagine the transformation of world that might occur if we act in it with our best hearts, on an interpersonal level, a community level, even a global level. I will close the sermon with a poem from the Soul Matters theme study groups Reverend Shauna and I are running. It's by Donna Markova, entitled, "I Will Not Die an Unlived Life." I will not die an unlived life. I will not live in fear of falling or catching fire. I choose to inhabit my days, to allow my living to open me, to make me less afraid, more accessible, to loosen my heart until it becomes a wing, a torch, a promise. I choose to risk my significance, to live so that which came to me as seed goes to the next as blossom, and that which came to me as blossom goes on as fruit. Whatever may come, may we face it with courage. Grounded in love, may we allow our living to open us, transforming self and world, seed into blossom, blossom into fruit. So may it be. When the tempest round you roars, may you feel in your soul the love that prevails on heaven and earth. May that love kindle within you the flame of courage. With arms and heart wide open through all life's ups and downs, may you find that no storm can shake your inmost calm. So may it be. As Cedar and Leslie extinguish our chalice, the women's choir will sing a piece from Mendelssohn's Elijah. This is the part of the story in which three angels give words of encouragement to the prophet Elijah, whom they have found distraught and despairing in the wilderness.